Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Support for this podcast comes from the patrons at patreon.com/FMLFPL.
Okay, welcome to another Fireside Chat. This is Alon. Today I'm joined by Michael Kaley of the Double Pivot Podcast. How are you doing, Michael?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me.
All right. So we're going to kind of just get your take on a bunch of the relevant fantasy teams and players in the game and just rapid fire through them, even though I know you're opposed to FPL and fantasy. Let's start with Tottenham. You're a Spurs fan. What do you think about Matto? James Maddison.
Yeah, so I think Maddison has been a really interesting player for the last several seasons. I've talked a bunch looking at Leicester over the years and why have they not improved? Why have so many of their players not improved in the ways that we thought they would? Way that Daka has had a few years of no progress and no progress from Harvey Barnes. Limited minutes at minimum for Iheanacho. And Maddison is the one kind of exception to that problem in the sense that, one, his XG numbers are quite good. He has been the last few seasons, last season he was at nearly 0.6 XG and XA per 90. Before that, he was in the 0.45 range. And then on top of that, where he's outperforming his XG is primarily in goals. He's now got a career over 500 shots between the championship and the Premier League, and there's a good amount of XG overperformance in that. So if you think that he is reasonably, just a 10-15% overperformer, that then adds to it. He's also a chunk of his shot production also from assists comes from set pieces. He's been getting, I think about a good chunk of his XG of his expected assists per 90 have always come from set pieces. Last season it was about 40% of his of that. But he will be on set pieces for Tottenham as well. And I think that the thing with Maddison is that when he is fit, he is a guy who produces a whole bunch of shots, regularly over 5 shot attempts and shot assists total. And the questions that you have with him are questions of, well, does this guy have to be the main on-ball player for his team? How well is he? And so if you're looking, when you're thinking about him, you know, you want to move him up a level, like, where is he going to go? Well, on Tottenham, he's going to be the main on-ball player for his team. I think that they are going to be depending on him quite a bit. They do not have a lot of other guys who really like to be on the ball. One of the main other ones, you know, we'll see if Lo Celso plays, but like, then you're like, that's how far you're having to reach to find somebody who wants to be on the ball. If Kane stays, Kane does want to be on the ball. But like, for the most part, it's a very, very off-ball attack that kind of needs someone like Madison. So like, I think that, you know, him continuing to put up numbers in the like 0.5, 0.6 G plus A per 90, that doesn't seem unreasonable to me. And you know, that's a useful fantasy player and it's a useful Tottenham player.
I saw in the 45 minutes he played against the Lion City Sailors, he took 8 bad low XG shots. And I was like, oh, you know, that's our boy right there.
He's going to score some again, goals. Like, you know, that's part of his production is, you know, you can question how productive that is necessarily for the team, but he's the guy who's going to be on the ball. He's going to be taking those shots. Yeah. Some of them will go in, and that's fantasy points.
Spurs really have a type, I guess, when you think of like Son, Kane, Mata. They love XG over performance. They love finishing. Speaking of Son, you think he's done?
Yeah, so it is a interesting question. Son did put up somewhat better numbers down the stretch and then had a surgery at the end of the season. And he has now said in the press that he was playing injured the whole season, that he was in pain from this hernia the whole season. And so my take on that would be, this is not a reason to think that the Son Heung-min that scored 20 goals is going to be back. If you look at his goal scoring over previous seasons, he never did that. Like, he had clearly a huge career season in 21-22. He's, you know, been mostly, you know, he's been sort of a 12 to 17 goal guy with Spurs before that. And he also had a huge XG spike. He'd be like a 0.5 XG per 90 when he's mostly been in the like 0.3 range with, as you mentioned before, huge finishing numbers.
Yeah.
So, like, I think that in the same way that looking back at 21-22, you shouldn't have looked at Son as one of the very best players in the game, I think that the injury stuff is enough to say, let's just toss it in the aggregate. This probably wasn't the cliff. You know, now you're averaging up a season where he was around, had his worst scoring season and relatively poor XG. And so, you know, you toss that in the average with a with some sort of age adjustment. You would think that you would expect pretty good numbers. You would expect, you know, something that's, you know, not, you know his 0.75 G plus A per 90, which was what he was at before that huge season, probably, like, you know, cut that down a little bit. Those were his peak age seasons. I think the worry would be that you have a guy who played injured for an entire season. How well is his body going to come off of that? And to what degree is this just sort of something that's going to start happening to him? This is what happens to people at 31, 32 years old trying to play elite soccer. And
don't
so,
remind me. It happens to you if you're trying to move also at that age.
Yeah, no. Bodies just constantly fall apart. Teeth fall out. Soccer analytics really gets you in touch with like those inevitabilities when you look at those age curves over aggregates. It's just like everyone just gets worse. Like, that's just how it works.
Everything. That's it. That's good stuff on Son. Yeah, I think the spike year kind of like distorts our view, because if you look like his XG and XA were basically in line with like all of his other seasons last season. It's just that one season sticks out where he scored 23 and was just incredible. So yeah, maybe back to normal. But I did have a follow-up question on that before we jump to the next team, which is just sort of like, what are the good stats? Like, in fantasy, I think we have this constant battle against our own, you know, sort of cognitive biases and For example, if I'm researching a player who I might bring into my team, if I like the player, I'll probably dig deeper until I find stats that support my priors and be like, yeah, this guy's good and cool. I should get them in my team. So if you're looking at an attacker for, you know, say someone you're in a profile in the double pivot or something like that, like what are you looking for? Like what are the key numbers that you like to hone in on?
Yeah, I mean, and it's you know, it's, especially when we're talking about fantasy, so we're talking about, you know, goal and assist output for the most part. You know, I think that, you know, it absolutely starts with XG. I think that, you know, this is our, if you want to start with one stat, that's the place to start. And then I would look at something, and then I'd further look somewhat with, and the other really important thing though is that I would look at XG over several seasons. That I think that we can get very, this is actually something that I realized still doesn't exist, and I am going to this is something I want to do. It's really simple, like just how many seasons, how many minutes of numbers, how far back are better at predicting. Like in baseball, we had you had 5-4-3 weighting the last three seasons, or 3-2-1 rating the last three seasons. Like I think that, you know, but just generally to say, you, if you're looking at just like looking at Sun a year ago, you really want to be bringing in other seasons, and the way that Sun's numbers worked out last season is another indicator of why you want to do that. I think the other thing is that I would look at I think that, like, with XG, you know, a small I wouldn't like put a huge amount of this would not be the first next thing I would look at, but certainly, you know, when we're talking about Sun in particular, someone who I don't think I've seen a study of the best finishers that hasn't had him in the top five. In the top 10, like, he has outperformed, he outperformed his XG in Germany, like, incredibly consistent across the board. And so I think that that is, you know, you certainly do expect the best finishers to continue to outperform XG. But that's a relatively small. The other thing I look at, especially when I'm looking at a smaller sample, or talk about Sun or Madison, we have a huge sample of what they are. And over what stabilizes faster, if you have a smaller sample, you're going to have obviously more variance in finishing. You're also going to have more variance in expected goals per shot. It is very clear that some players are better at getting good shots. Certainly some players like taking worse shots.
Yeah.
But if you have a player who is getting it done in a relatively small sample with high XG on a smaller number of shots, there's a greater chance that there's a little bit of air in there, that they got a couple of, you know, not that many minutes. Some very big chances are distorting things. What you like to see for consistency with strikers and goal scorers is shot volume as well as XG volume. One of the other things to look at is especially with assists is breaking out whether they are on set pieces and how much they get from set pieces. For both the reason that obviously if a player is not going to be on set pieces anymore, that you should expect those numbers to go away. Like, when you're looking at it for a team, you are like, you want to think about a player's value to that team. And if they are being chosen for set pieces, it doesn't mean that 100% of their value is their skill and all the other players who aren't of the set players have zero value. If you're playing fantasy, that is actually exactly how you think about it. The player is on set pieces.
Or they're not. They take pens,
gets 100% of the value.
Yeah.
And so I think that, you know, looking at breaking out set pieces for assists is really crucial. And then the other thing is, like, with assists, you really, really need to be looking at expected goals assisted. And then the other thing with that is I like to look at whether those expected goals assisted corresponds to other good passing numbers, because, like, you know, and so you can see this, that one of the simplest things that, you know, FBref has Opta's XA, which is a statistic that is produced not from expected goals assisted, is what it says. That they assisted the shot that had that many XG. And Optus expected assists is measuring, okay, this pass was played from this point to this other point.
Oh,
and okay. What is the likelihood? And there's some other indicators in it as well. It's a little bit of a black box. And so these things are, it's in no way a perfect statistic, but it's a good check. If someone is way above their XA, you have some questions. The other thing is just looking at the other numbers. Like if a player is someone who's assisting a lot of shots, that suggests just passing skill. There should be other things that suggest passing skill. There should be a higher rate of pass completion than you would expect for the kind of passes they're playing. There should be more passes into the penalty area, more progressive passes as a percentage of the passes they're playing. And so again, like you want, because assist numbers are, there's more variance there because obviously someone else did the shooting. That means that you want to be looking at finding more of a more holistic evidence of that skill in the player's numbers.
Yeah, that all makes a lot of sense. And FPL is just all small sample size, you know, so we always run into this issue of like, it's been three games. Do I bring this guy into my team? Is he really this good or is he just hot or whatever? But I think also I just wanted to sort of like translate the XG per shot thing that you said, because we always talk about it, but I don't think that people understand it. It's like some center backs just have crazy high XG. Like they just like lead the league in, you know, XG per shot or something like that, or close to it. And it's like, they get so few shots that it's like, they just got that one tap in off a flick on that was like 0.8 XG. And it just like inflates their numbers like crazy. Cause it's just so hard to try and find the center back goals or whatever.
Exactly. So they're going to be getting headers on set pieces. And if one of those is a knockdown that they tap in, it all adds up. Cause then all of those, those headers from reasonably close by are not going to be zero XG. So that's how it inflates the average.
Yeah.
There's a couple. I was going to give up examples, but we're going to be coming along to a bunch of other players, so I think we can
just get
to them and I can give those examples.
Yeah, let's jump to Brighton, who I think are just a fascinating team in real life and in fantasy. And I just saw them in person actually, and they were just absolutely incredible.
Cool.
Is it reasonable to expect them being just a top four attacking team again? Like, is that their level now?
Yeah, I think it's. You know, again, like this is why I like taking multi-season samples.
Yeah.
And they were not a top four attacking team this season before. They made a really big jump in their attacking production. And, you know, you can tell a story about why that happened. That happened because De Zerbi is their coach and they play cool football now. And, you know, it's not a totally unreasonable story. But they got a ton of attacking production, not just from some young guys, but like Solly March had his best career season.
I'm so happy you're bringing him up.
had a fantastic season. Trossard had one of his best seasons. Welbeck he didn't finish well, but his XG was quite high. And there's just a lot of players who played very well in attack for this team. And on top of that, they will not have Trossard putting up, you know, the 1300 very good minutes that he did. And so I would expect some, certainly Gross and March, they have well established levels of production that they were well above. I would expect somewhat less from that. The positive case for Brighton certainly is that Nciso and Ferguson, who are very young, 18 year olds, both had really huge numbers in limited minutes.
Yeah.
And generally, like with how limited the minutes were, I would be skeptical of, you know, if I didn't think there were any air in Enciso's numbers, I would be talking about him as like the next world superstar. This is a guy who had like over four shots per 90, 0.67 G plus A per 90, 0.64 XG and XA per 90, while playing as really a 10 or a winger attacking midfield, basically never as a center forward. But it's 800 minutes, mostly as a sub. I think that there's some limitations. I think Ferguson will have limitations on his minutes as well. But the positive case, I would certainly expect them to fall back some in their attacking production because of the number. It's very hard to look through this entire roster and find a player who didn't have at least a very good for them attacking season. And that doesn't happen very often. No coach can make every single player have a very good for them attacking season.
Yeah, but that's kind of where I was going to go. It's just like, what is their talent level, right? Because like it's hard to imagine that, like you said, like a coach can just take Solly March from like 0.15 to 1.8 XG plus XA per 90 to 0.55. Like, I'm just like, what is happening? Like, everyone's getting March in fantasy, and Walsh and I on our podcast are just like, he's Solly March, he sucks. So yeah, I think that's a really hard one to evaluate, and they're priced accordingly. Like, they're priced not that highly. They're not like one of the big teams, and everyone's having a tough time sort of like separating out, like, wait, but they're so good, but wait, they're priced like a mid-table team. Like, what do we do with that? And then I guess just a specific player that's new here is João Pedro, which was not a cheap purchase by them. Just wondering what you think of him this season.
Yeah, I mean, so I like João Pedro very much as a signing for Brighton for the medium term. Okay. I think that between João Pedro and Enciso and Ferguson, they have a ton to dream on for the near future. But João Pedro is very much a bet on his ball progression.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
He has this massive, massive number of take-ons, high level of success. He's done this at a bunch of different levels. We have a fair amount of Premier League minutes from him as well, where he was, again, able to really, you know, just take on defenders at a very high rate and beat them, which is a really, really good indicator for a young player. It's an indicator that captures both technique and physical ability. That's, you know, that's how you beat somebody. Right. You have to have technique, and you've got to have the speed to get past them. And he's got those things. At the same time, we also have 3,000 championship minutes where he put up, you know, 0.45 goals and assists per 90, and that's a little bit ahead of his XG. Like, that is, and then you have to take, you know, what, like 20%+ off of that when you're converting from the championship to Premier League. So like, I think that the fact that he was a useful player in the Premier League at 19 and then a good player in the championship at 20, and he has these huge ball progression indicators of skill and technique are really great. He's also a good presser. I would be surprised if he is a big shot and goal producer this season. Like, I would be, I think in some ways the upside for Ferguson and Enciso in fantasy seems a little clearer. Although all of them, you know, all of them are risks, are bets, are, you know, maybe you're watching this. I don't know how fantasy really works, but maybe it's so I would be thinking about, like, you know, if I were in a draft league, I'd be looking at like them as a late pick that hopefully I can get a little before other people.
High ceiling.
In sort of traditional fantasy, it's sort of hard to, like, you monitor those guys and you hope to pick them up before their prices go up, I guess. I don't really know how things work. You can explain that. But like, I really like all of their ceilings. I for the team, I think the positive bet is, say one or two of these guys make the leap now.
That's what they're doing.
Then you're looking at something really good. good big. For fantasy, it's hard because you can't. Brighton bought the aggregate of them. Very smart. In fantasy, you can't buy the aggregate of those three guys.
Right. Yeah, I understand what you're saying. So it's kind of maybe one to monitor and just see, you know, how quickly will Pedro supplant March, or how quickly will Ferguson just start taking all of Welbeck's minutes, or Welbeck gets injured and he just starts all the games or something like that before we maybe jump on some of the guys. Okay, good.
Yeah, the one guy I just would want to mention that, like, I think that for the other upside player here that I think is really interesting is Mitoma.
I mean, we love Mitoma here, but talk to me about him. Yeah. How good is he?
He's great at a couple of things that you don't care about in fantasy, which is, you know, not optimal. He's just a absolutely superstar ball progressor, both passing and carrying, bring the ball into the penalty area at absolutely massive rates. What I think is interesting is that he has the profile in a number of other ways, his ability to make space with his ball carrying, is that I would expect someone like that to be taking more shots, and he doesn't.
But he takes good ones.
Exactly. And so my question, the way that you get because right now he is like a really good player because of his ball progression, and then he's putting up like really good XG and XA and goals and assists per nine. That makes him like a legitimate Premier League star. But the next step for him is more than two shots per 90. Like, if this guy was getting three or three and a half shots per 90, like, it would be very easy to see him as a star and as see him putting up much bigger fantasy numbers. And that doesn't seem super unreasonable from the rest of his profile, especially if the team is going to lean more on him this season. So, like, the thing that puts a ceiling on his production is the number of shots that he's taking.
Yeah.
And like, how weird would it be if he started taking more? It doesn't seem that out of the question. Again, these are all upside pieces that I like.
Yeah, but my question, I guess, would be also, did he just have a crazy career peak year? Because we you know, he came from Belgium playing 1,100 minutes. We have, like, nothing on him. He just came out of nowhere. Is he, like, we're talking about him as if he's a star, and watching him is so exciting, and I like to watch him, so I'm happy to accept that. But at the same time, right, this is 2,300 minutes in a top league. Yep. Like, how much, there's a lot of variance still in his game. Exactly. Right? He could just go the other way.
And I think that's a really, really good catch. We're talking about 2,300 minutes in a top league. What's interesting about his Belgian league numbers is that I do have those, the ball progression numbers were elite there as well.
Oh, okay.
So, you know, obviously, like, you know, there's a difference between being elite for Union Saint-Gilloise and being elite for Brighton, and you know, you could imagine someone who is the best ball progressor in the Belgian league coming to the Premier League and being very good rather than being one of the best ball progressors.
Right.
The shape of his production looks right. And he has this, like, you know, fascinating career progression where he just starts very, very, very late. So he's only, you know, you would expect someone like him to have been playing professional soccer much earlier rather than coming out of, you know, four-year university into the J League.
Yeah.
And so he comes through later. So all of these things are, I find the story of how his 2590s are compelling, very compelling.
Yeah.
But I think that I think you're making a very fair correction that if you are betting on even further upside, but you're holding constant his numbers over 2690s, you are making an analytical mistake. We should be regressing those first 2690s to the mean, and that means, you know, a little bit less shots, a little bit less XG per shot, and those sorts of things. And so then, so if you're taking upside off of, you know, nearly 0.5 goals and assists per 90 and better than that in XG, if you're taking upside from, you know, say you had a, you know, a regression factor of like, you know, 0.25 and you're dropping down to maybe 0.4, like, and then you're taking upside off that, I think that's a more compelling way of thinking about
right,
it.
Right, right, right. It is also amazing how much of difference, I mean, two shots to like 2.75 shots makes in like a profile. Like you and, you and Mike always talk about this, and it's not something that would have clicked in my head until you guys kind of like expanded on that. It's interesting. Let's jump to Villa. Another sort of good top half team. A lot of interesting fantasy picks here. Got better under Emery by all the numbers I've seen. Let's start with Watkins. I mean, he's obviously a pretty popular fantasy pick. I mean, how good is Ollie Watkins? He's entering his prime now. He's 26, 27.
Yeah, I mean he's been pretty consistent over his career, and what he's given Villa that I think it should not be underrated in fantasy is he's on the pitch
all the time.
You know, he started all 46 matches for Brentford his last season in the Championship.
Insane.
And so if you're looking at his his goals and assist numbers, it's like, you know, 0.5, and his XG is right about in line. So he's been a very goals equals XG guy for a while. And you know, so you add all of those things up and you're getting like 0.5 goals and assists per 90. It is solid, not superstar production. But when you are able to start 37, 33, and 36 games, and before that, my God, 40, 39, 35, 46, the man is made of adamantium.
Monster. Like,
that translates to 10 to 15 goals. And that is, again, like that has a, I think that has a lot of value for Aston Villa or for whatever team, because they don't have, they have less to worry about. It's not incredible per 90 minutes. If you're betting on him, what you're betting on is that he has displayed a skill of staying healthy, and that Villa are going to continue depending on him as their healthy central striker. I think that
I guess I'm follow up question. I'm because he had like sort of his hot run in the second half of the season. And people in fantasy are sort of attributing a bit of that to Emery and like the team playing better. And I know he finished over his XG, but he was also putting up really big XG in that second half run. Like put a lot of 0.7s in there in matches where he was scoring and stuff like that. I guess what I'm asking is like, do your numbers show that? Is he possibly taking another step forward, or would you expect just sort of same normal season, which is still good, but you know.
Yeah, I mean you can't rule anything out. Unai Emery does not have like a major history of getting great performances out of his strikers. He's had a lot of, you know, workmanlike strikers in high possession teams.
Yeah.
And Aston Villa down the stretch last season, they had a So it's a weird run under Emery because it starts out quite poorly, and then picks up, and they did down the last like month or so of the season play at a pretty high level.
Yeah.
I am. It's less to if you look at the aggregates, it's not that good. You have to cut out the first part and emphasize the second part of Emery's tenure to make it look that good. And Emery has a pretty long history managing. Like he's done a good job, but I think that like I would want to see some like I feel like I know who Unai Emery is. I feel like I've seen Unai Emery teams play a lot of football, and it's good. He gets I think he is a positive manager, and he also has some like. Has some weirdly amazing knockout tournament results. But he, for the most part, likes to play a very defensive possession style. He likes to get a lot of defensive work out of some of his tens, and he likes to have one or two runners who are going to be getting shots on the end of it. And for Villa, his team was much more attacking than usual.
Yeah,
and also
pressing.
Put up somewhat worse defensive numbers than usual.
Yeah.
And if you're looking at him as someone who's now going to get continuing more attacking value out of his players, that's a different Unai Emery. That's Unai Emery adapting to something very new. I would tend to expect him to be what he's been and to play a team that is going to be a little bit more conservative and is going to do, is going to be less aggressive with their possession. Yeah. So yeah. Like, it's hard for me to say that a small a part of Unai Emery's tenure at Aston Villa, which also was like unusual for Unai Emery's quite good career, is thus going to like translate into big numbers for his striker. That's a lot of steps I don't care for.
I hear you. What about Diaby, who could be that other runner and that other shot getter and that other goal scorer for them?
Yeah. So he has put up, I we absolutely need more work done on what's going on with Bundesliga translations, in the same way that that we need more work on, and that we have for a long time needed more work on Eredivisie translations.
Right.
Because it seems very clear from players that have come through both of those leagues, and that there are. It's not that there is what the people online call the Bundesliga tax. Like, clearly some skill sets translate and some don't.
Right. That's interesting. I mean,
the thing that I would always used to say about the Eredivisie was that both Luis Suarez and Vincent Janssen were like top Eredivisie scorers. And
yeah, it's pretty amazing.
And like, Suarez comes over and just does the same stuff he was doing. And other guys flop. And so the question is, what is it that makes you a sort of peculiarly Bundesliga or peculiarly Eredivisie player?
Right.
And I think that I definitely worry about players with Diaby's skill set. There is a lot of room behind Bundesliga defenses, and so players who really are focused on exploiting that space, which is what he does. He runs in behind and he carries, and then he's very, very good once he's done that about picking passes. And so his numbers end up being high expected goals assisted, with relatively few touches and without amazing passing numbers, because what he's doing is he's being able to play those most valuable of passes where you've beaten the defense, gotten your head up, and you're looking for someone who can basically tap it in. And I definitely, like, this is not me saying I think Moussa Diaby is going to fail. I do not have not done the work to really identify this. But I definitely do worry about whether the things that he has done the best in his career look like the kinds of things that are somewhat easier to do in the Bundesliga. I think that you would want to look at his international numbers as well here. And they are quite good. They are quite good. He's been in the in the Champions League and in the Europa League last season. In the Europa League, the season before that, he continued to produce the same kinds of numbers. So that, like, so I'm sort of, I've got these two things in my head. One is that his profile as a player worries me. The other is that the thing you would test that against is, okay, how do you do outside of the outside of the Bundesliga, and we have here over the last two seasons, like 1,600 minutes in two reasonably competitive European competitions, in which he was a quite productive attacker. Yeah. So I'm very much of two minds. I think we really need more work done on exactly what constitutes Bundesliga problems.
I know. I was about to say rewind to me a year ago being like, I don't know, Haaland, like there's so much space against these Bundesliga defenses. Is he going to be good here? And then, you know, 40 goals later.
Exactly. Yeah.
Let's jump to Brentford. Interesting one with Tony's suspension. So first of all, I mean, Wissa is a big talking point in fantasy, as you'd imagine. He's cheap and he should start every game in place of Tony until Tony returns in 6 months or whatever. So What are you seeing from Wissa? How can he replace Tony's production? Mbeumo's part of this as well. They're both like very much trendy, but sort of feel a little bit risky because maybe Brentford's just going to be bad because Tony's their best player.
Yeah, so Brentford last season got... Tony had been a pretty consistent producer, like another level lower than this for a while. And this last season was the first season that Tony put up those, like, you know, over 0.5 XG and XA per 90 and goals minus penalty kicks to match it. He really had not been that player before. And then on top of that, Mbeumo took a big step forward, mostly in that he was assisting a lot more good chances. And so those two things happened at the same time. You have a big step forward in Tony's production, in shots and goals, and a big step forward in Mbeumo's production in assists and XA. And like, how to separate those two things out, I don't really know. I do think that, you know, last season was, I was somewhat shocked how good Brentford was.
It's incredible.
I expected them to do more to build out their team, and they stuck with this very, very cheap, mostly guys from their championship run season, and it worked again, which I think is a very impressive achievement. So, you know, I'm less compelled by the regression to the mean argument than I would have been last season.
Yeah,
but like, you're still looking at just a minuscule payroll. And that does tend to project. So like the baseline for them should be a little lower. At the same time, like, you know, they're going to attack with two guys.
Yep.
They're going to attack with Mbeumo and most likely Wissa. And between the, and even Mbeumo, like the season before, and he had a bad finishing season the season before, but he was at like, you know, 0.4 XG plus XA per 90. And if Wissa is doing something similar or a little bit higher, but he's playing all of those minutes, like that adds up to, you know, a fair number of goals. I am pretty skeptical of them. I'm pretty skeptical. I think that they both got, they got breakout seasons from Mbeumo and Tony that you would expect some regression from, and then Wissa has not produced at the same level as Tony, so you expect less there. But you know, it does seem to me that what you're talking about in terms of fantasy is the pretty high certainty that these are going to be the guys.
Yeah,
and so what goals are there will come from them.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm kind of skeptical of exactly how good Brentford can be again with such a shoestring roster.
Well, Wissa's also just an interesting prospect too, right? Because he was playing in Ligue 2 and put up good numbers. He had one season for Lorient where he was the main man in Ligue 1, and then he's just been a backup for two seasons. And so it's all just like, it's mostly like sub minutes, a lot of wing minutes. I feel like when I watch him, I like what I'm seeing and I think he's good, but I feel like it's hard to statistically be like, oh, this guy's definitely good, or how good. It's a hard thing for me to say.
Yeah, that's a... I think, you know, the one thing with him is that his very that very impressive season for Lorient. This is something this is actually one that I hadn't clocked before, but he was under two shots per 90 and at 0.4 XG per 90, which is crazy.
Yeah,
and I think and he has remained at Brentford. At Brentford, he's been around two shots per 90, so actually a little bit better, while his XG has dropped by a lot. His XG is now running at a much more normal forward XG per 90 in the range of, like, you know, a little, you know, like 0.12, 0.13. Like, that's more normal. And that's, I would be relatively skeptical of how much you could do with his XG per shot at Lorient.
Yeah. Yeah. And I don't know how much possession adjustments might matter or not matter for shot production, but, you know, Lorient were a newly promoted team that season who finished 16th, so I imagine they weren't very good.
Yeah.
Let's go to Chelsea.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, first of all, just, is it possible that they're good with how much movement they've had and how much changeover they've had and how new the squad is? Like, what is their actual, like, range of variance? Because I'm having a hard time just wrapping my head around
it's
that.
It's so large.
Yeah.
Chelsea were just not good last season. Like, they're usually when you've got, like, a Premier League, a really good Premier League team that drops out of the race, what their numbers look like is somewhat more like Tottenham's last season.
Mm.
You know, positive goal difference, positive XG difference, but just, like, you good. Know, worse than Brighton. How much are they better than Brentford? That kind of thing. Chelsea were just, like, the lower part of mid table. They finished in the lower part of mid table, and their goal difference and their expected goal difference look like the lower part of mid table.
Yeah,
and I think that a weird thing is happening with people talking about Chelsea, which is not necessarily uncompelling, but just something had to be wrong. Everyone projected this team to be in the top four chase last season, and they had been in the top four chase the season before, and then they were bad instead. And that makes no sense. And we don't have, and we've gotten, like, relatively little clear, you know, they had injury problems, but, like, you know, Mason Mount, they don't have Mason Mount anymore, but Mason Mount's production just disappeared. And Raheem Sterling went, his production falls off by, like, 50%. And I just don't know what to do with this. They go and sign a bunch of young players who did not have particularly compelling statistical profiles, and then you're getting, you know, 650 minutes from Mudryk and Madueke and guys who just, like, you know, you don't expect them to be that good, and they're not that good.
Yeah.
Like, Felix was worse than he'd been in La Liga. So are we talking with some of the young guys, like, their production was about at the level that you'd kind of expect, but everyone else falls off? What does that mean?
Right.
I don't know.
Yeah, no one knows, right? I mean, the last time they were this bad, they won the league the next year with Conte, and everything went just back to normal, right? Like, mm-hmm. Hazard had that weird, like, four-goal season, and everyone was terrible, and then they were just back to normal. I feel like they maybe just quit on the team, quit on the managers, I should say. But, yeah, so a bunch of new guys and new attackers, you know, that's always interesting for fantasy. So, Nkunku got hurt, so maybe not relevant, but I'm still curious, like, where you're at on him, because you pull up his FB ref page and you're just like, oh, this is the best player in the world. Like, what the hell? You know, like, all of his numbers are out of control. And yeah, it's the Bundesliga. But you and Mike seem a little, is he that good tweener kind of guy on him on your podcast? So I was kind of curious, like, what's the deal with that? Like, his comps are Mbappe and all these guys, you know? I'm like, how good is he?
Yeah. So, so he has been producing at, you know, a high level in the Bundesliga ever since he got there.
Yeah.
And it's an unusual profile in the way that he 2 seasons ago took this really big step forward in shots. Went from a guy who was taking last season and at nearly 3.5 shots per 90. He took a big step forward in XG per shot as well. So you go from 5 and 6 goals to 20 and 16 goals, and like that overstates it a little bit, but that is more or less
too.
Yeah. So that, I mean, all that overstates it a little bit, but he is getting more and better shots.
Yeah.
And one of the things that pops for him, which I think is just really interesting, and is that he has been a pretty great passer sort of all across his numbers. He has incredibly high pass completion for a forward for all of the passes that he is making. He's making a ton of passes into the penalty area. A lot of progressive passes. And so like it makes sense that he would be assisting so many shots. That was, you know, his first 2 seasons at Leipzig, he was like, you know, 3.5 shot assists per 90. And that dropped off more down to like 2 shot assists per 90 as he became more of a finisher, as he like shot in more of those situations. So was played into more of those situations. So it is a profile of an attacker who kind of does everything for their team. And I think that the question to me is exactly what does this translate into in the Premier League? Are they really going to do what Leipzig did? Is he able to do what he did for Leipzig, where he's like the whole thing? He's right. The show. He is still assisting a couple shots per 90 while getting on the end of 3 shots per 90. And he's basically in the middle of every very good passing move. He's making a lot of progressive passes. He's making a lot of passes in the penalty area. He's doing everything that you could want from a forward. And my guess is that he's going to have a more limited and prescribed role in the Premier League. And so then where does that translate out in his numbers? And so like that probably translates out in fewer shots. That probably translates out in him being more of the guy who is trying to create for other players. Certainly with I'm kind of interested in, like, if they can get the whole Nkunku package to translate, certainly that's a superstar.
Yeah.
I kind of expect that one of those things is going to fall by the wayside, and they're going to try to focus more on one specific area of his production rather than running the entire team through him the way that Leipzig did.
And that's because of the league difference, or just because tactically that's, you know, Poch isn't like, we're not going to run our, this isn't Messi, we're not going to run our entire team through him, or like why do you expect that, you know?
Yeah, and it's definitely the league difference, and it is, you know, the way that Leipzig have been constructed. This is like they were, when Nkunku was fit, you know, If you look at the, you know, they have Andre Silva and Timo Werner as attackers, and they'd have Szoboszlai as another passer, and the guy that you would want to focus everything through would be Nkunku, whether it was Szoboszlai passing it to him or him creating for those two strikers. He would be the linchpin in either of those things.
Yeah,
and I am. I and with the number of players that Chelsea have who want to be on the ball, like, I am not sure how much he's going to be the guy who's just like always on the ball in the middle of a big attacking move.
I see. Yeah. And then what about Nico Jackson, who might actually be the recipient of a lot of these passes, right? And
yeah,
we expect him to play nine and Nkuku to sort of be behind him floating around, right?
Yeah. And Jackson is another interesting one. Again, a player that I like a lot. But one of the things that really sticks out in his numbers, you know, there's certainly a fair bit of air in his finishing last season. But even taking that, you know, 8xG and 12 goals, even take that out, it's good numbers. But what really pops for him is that he does other stuff on the ball.
Okay.
It's a shot light striker, just 2.3 shots per 90 and high xG per shot. So you expect some amount of regression there. What's really impressive is he's a good outlet running the wing or running the channel, and then once he receives the ball, he's very good at making the next pass, whether it's a pass in the penalty area, whether it's just, you know, safely retaining possession, high pass completion, good numbers of progressive passes and carries, and then going along with that, good numbers of shot assists. And what makes his numbers stand out and what makes him look like a really good buy is not him getting on the end of things at a hugely high rate, and it's a relatively low number of shots. It's everything else, and I like that a lot in his profile. And so it's, you can imagine with him and Nkunku either that having two guys who like being on the ball that much together is like too much of that.
Yeah,
like they're going to the question for Chelsea is how do they get enough shots out of two guys who really like, and a big part of their profile is creating shots for other players.
Right.
How does that balance out? And right. You would really like, it would be nice if there was somebody there. Honestly, like, I know that everyone at Chelsea hates him and he's clearly unhappy. It didn't work out. But like, João Félix is exactly the guy you'd want. Somebody that all they do is get on the end of other people's chances.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a weird balance, and like that's what they're going to have to work out. With questions about how things translate from the Bundesliga plus the tactical balance, it's a really interesting question. I think that like, I like both of these players. I like both of these signings. I think that, you know, are they elevating a team from the mid table? Are they elevating a team that like throw away last season away? They've got like the third or fourth largest payroll in the league. Yeah. So they should be the third or fourth best team. That's the bigger question.
That's why the range is so high, right?
Yep.
It's where do you begin? Do you begin from a 12th place team or do you begin from a fourth place team?
Yep.
Yeah. Can you explain to me, like, I'm 5 years old, why 2.3 is light on shots and 3 is a good on shots? 3 per 90 and 2.3 per 90? Because on the season, that's what, 25-ish more shots. And it doesn't seem like a lot, but it is.
Yeah, so I mean it's 2.5 is more shots. If you're getting high rates of XG per shot, you're talking like, you know, 4 goals. That's a lot of goals.
Yeah.
I think that one thing here is it's worth noting the difference in position. With getting 3 shots per 90 while playing as a striker is sort of like basically the line, like what you're looking for in like a big like superstar shot striker, like shot monster numbers, is 4 shots per 90 or more.
Kane.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That was what popped in his numbers from when he was very young. And for the most part, shots are a young player skill. When you look at age curves, what tends to happen is that players come into the league at about the highest level of shots per 90 they're going to have. Maybe you can have a little bit of a spike later, but it tends to, and the way that they improve is by maintaining that shot level while increasing XG per shot. And you can kind of think of it, it makes sense. Like you learn the game, you learn the spaces, you're better at getting into better positions to get shots. And that's more of an old player skill. And that's how strikers tend to age. Kane is aged that way. Kane gets fewer shots than he used to, but gets very good shots. And he also is he's added like shot assists, which is less usual. But so when you have a young player who is playing as a striker like Jackson was, you really want to be in the threes because like when you're dependent on old player skill, if you're dependent on getting having very high XG per shot, and what you expect is that the shots are going to decline, and that means the XG per shot needs to get even better. And that is relatively unlikely.
I see.
Whereas, Nkunku, because there's so much other stuff in the profile, you know, getting over three shots per 90, like, you know, that's a, you know, an okay, at least okay striker number. And then he was getting pretty good shots for the most part. When you're also getting all of those shot assists and a ton of possession value as well, that's a huge shot number. It's not that like 3.3 shots is, you know, that makes a player.
Yeah.
It is that plus all of the other stuff that you're getting is very, very good.
Yeah. And it's a lot of this is, well, I mean, it's fantasy relevant, but some of this is projectability, which like in fantasy, we don't really care about because we're just looking at one season. Right. So it's interesting. Maybe last team. Let's just talk about Newcastle. I know that you guys are sort of low on them and don't like their transfers that much. I think a lot of people I'm seeing are low on them. I mean, gambling markets still have them as like one of the six best teams, and their numbers were very good last season. So I'm curious, like, why are you low on them? What is quote unquote air in their numbers? And just talk about Newcastle for a sec.
Yeah, so the simplest thing is to just look at them as like the mirror image of Chelsea. And no one thought they were top four team coming into the season.
Right.
And they did not play like a top four team, even in their, you know, good run under Howe after the ownership switch and after they, you know, went and got some like, you know, perfectly solid better defenders for a couple of different positions. So if you are looking at Chelsea and saying we shouldn't project them as one of the, as like, you know, a mid-table team just because they had one mid-table season, the same is true of Newcastle. They and like, because their owners have come in, obviously the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia has unlimited money, they are not putting unlimited money into Newcastle right now. Newcastle do not have a wage bill that is as large as Tottenham's.
Yeah,
so it's they are not right now spending the kind of money like we expect that they will. I think that it seems pretty clear to me that one, this is like not the main thing that Mohammed bin Salman is paying attention to. He's much more invested in the sporting leagues that they are buying in Gulf and in obviously the Saudi Pro League, and they are also trying to follow the rules, more or less. They're trying not to get on UEFA's bad side yet, at least. And so, you know, I could go into like the geopolitics of all of this, but like for fantasy and for like projecting next season, what it means is that this just isn't yet the team you think of when you think of, oh, they're an oil money club. They are not right now an oil money club in their actual present spending on wages and players. So betting on them as a fourth place team, as a top four team, is betting on them significantly overperforming the actual resources that are put into the team right now.
And the other part of that bet, a little bit, is like we got a sneak preview of the oil, right? When Callum Wilson gets injured last season in August, and 5 days later, they spend like $70 million on Isak. Yeah. Right? So like that's always possible, right? I think that's like baked into the gambling markets, et cetera, right? Is that like January, maybe they just spend $150 million and it's like, oh, wow, they're good now. Yeah.
Yeah. And so I think that gives them a clear advantage over most of the other teams in the mid table. But and I think that within another year or two or three, they should be there, so long as that they spend that money reasonably well. The other thing is that, like, there were two big things that happened for them in attack and defense. One was that Callum Wilson had the season of his career. And you know, 0.85 XG and XA per 90 with, you know, goals and assists to match, like that. Like, Callum Wilson's been a good player for a while, but, like, I don't think anyone projects Callum Wilson to do that again. And, you know, that is going to be a loss. They may get somewhat better production out of Isak, but I don't think that they should accept that. And then the other thing is the defense was legitimately amazing. They were the probably the best defense in the Premier League over last season, or at least one of the top two. And a big part of that, so part of that is, like, you know, you just sort of, you know, the dumb thing is to say, well, they weren't one of the best defenses in the league the year before that, so you're aggressive to the mean. They also basically played the same back four the entire season.
Fitness was good.
Really, really high levels of fitness. So if you're looking for, if you have a question of, why was this team so shockingly good defensively, and you have a real outlier in terms of the number of the repeated minutes that all of their defenders got to play together, and then three of those defenders are 30 years or older at the same time, like, they have some injuries, they have some decline, they have some rotation, the relationships aren't as good, that is how that regression to the mean would happen.
Right.
I think it comes. So, like, right now, I have Newcastle a little bit. You know, I think that the you know, the top of the league is City, and then Arsenal, and then probably and then like a group of four or five teams. I think that United and Liverpool are then somewhat ahead of Chelsea, Spurs,
Newcastle, Spurs,
and Brighton, and so, like, I kind of tier it out, like, one team, two teams, and four teams. I guess that's very nice math, isn't it?
And then there's the bottom 10 teams who could all get relegated, but we don't care about them in fantasy because they're bad. Let's end it there, Michael. Where can people listen to your pod and follow you and all that kind of stuff?
Yeah, thanks so much for having me on. This is fun. This is the sort of thing. This is certainly it's kind of fun. I have an analytics pod, and it's a little bit less like reading off numbers and explaining them than this was. This is really fun for me. We do this sometimes, but we cover a number of things. But we a podcast called The Double Pivot, where we talk about, it's an analytics podcast looking at players and teams, but also sort of trying to step back and use those same methods to talk a little bit about tactics in an analytically focused way, and to talk about larger issues in football, again, using the same kind of critical and rigorous thinking they try to bring to statistics. So that's at patreon.com/doublepivot if you want to take a look at what we're doing.
Yeah, and I can vouch. It's the only podcast I'm subscribed to on Patreon. I'm a big fan. Michael, this is your third time on the podcast, so obviously I'm a fan. And, you know, it's not a fantasy podcast, but the, like, player profiles, team previews, all that stuff is, you know, I learn a lot. So check it out for sure. Thanks.
Thank you. I'll see you later.
Bye.
Sports Social Podcast Network.